stocks tumble as tariffs seem imminent.
These companies, they are foreseeing that the profits will be likely to go down in this year. So therefore, the investors responded to this signal.
Russia advances in Kursk as Washington and Kyiv restart negotiations.
By encircling Ukrainian soldiers, they aim to force them either to flee or to surrender in Western Russia.
And a look at Canada's next prime minister.
He has a lot of insider connections, and that is something that the country could benefit from in this moment of crisis, even existential crisis, as Canada responds to Donald Trump's tariffs and Donald Trump's musings about Canada being annexed by the United States.
Today is Tuesday, March 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish. We begin today looking at the economy, and it's not great news. In an interview over the weekend, U.S. President Donald Trump would not rule out a recession. In fact, he seemed to imply that tough times were coming when he said that his policies would bring about a, quote, period of transition. On Monday, the U.S. stock markets were way, way down, flirting with its worst day in years as Wall Street questions just how much pain President Trump will let the economy endure through tariffs and other policies to get what he wants. The S&P 500 fell 2.7% on Monday, its sharpest one-day drop since the days of high inflation in 2022. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 890 points, and the NASDAQ Composite dropped 4%. All this comes amid global tension over trade, just days before U.S. tariffs go into effect on steel and aluminum imports. The EU trade minister says that the U.S. does not seem to be engaging to make a deal. Reuters' Francis McGuire has more.
The Trump administration does not seem to be engaging in talks to avoid trade conflict with the European Union. That's according to the EU's trade head Monday. The comments come just 2 days before the US is due to impose tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports. European Trade Commissioner Maros Sefcovic.
I traveled to US last month. I was seeking constructive dialogue to avoid the unnecessary pain of measures and countermeasures. We jointly identified a few areas that would allow us to move forward by fostering mutual benefits. But in the end, as it said, one hand cannot clap. The U.S. administration does not seem to be engaging to make a deal.
He further said the EU was ready for constructive engagement. He added nobody wins from tariffs and that partners with $1.7 trillion of mutual trade should be extremely careful.
We will always protect European businesses, workers and consumers from unjustified tariffs. I think we've been very clear about it and we know that they expect no less from us.
Markets have been rocked by the US imposing numerous tariffs since Trump's return as president earlier this year. The US put 25% tariffs on imports from Mexico and Canada last week. And Washington also placed fresh duties on Chinese goods.
That's Francis McGuire of Reuters reporting. So exactly how are the trade tariffs, the threat of recession, and the stock market all related? How will ordinary Americans be affected, and what can people around the world expect? To learn more, I'm joined by Chris Tang. He's a distinguished professor of economics at UCLA's Anderson School of Management.
So right now, by imposing higher tariffs for importing goods from China, Mexico, or Canada, so that would actually make the cost of importing goods or parts or components to the U.S. much higher. So in that case, the cost of importing goods will be higher. Then these companies, they have a dilemma. One, they can absorb the costs, which affect their earnings, which will affect the stock price. That's what trigger. The other option is that is they pass through. That means, well, if they get to pay the higher tariffs, they have to charge the consumer higher prices. But then there's a problem. If they charge the higher price to consumers, then Americans will buy less. That will also affect their earnings as well. So as a result, the net effect is that these companies, they are foreseeing that the profits will be likely to go down in this year. So therefore, the investors responded to this signal. And therefore, you can see they start selling the stocks. That's why you can see the stock market tumble today. Steve, I do worry because I especially for the tariffs, I want to add the point that it's been studied and known that tariffs will affect the low income group tremendously because these people, they don't have other options. But I think that now under the Trump's tariffs, they were imposing all these tariffs, these people end up paying a higher price because the percentage of the income is spent on consumptions because they don't have any much savings. But I think that this is something we need to keep an eye on.
Is a day like Monday when the stock market lost a lot of value a good indicator of how an economy is doing?
Not necessarily. So I think this is a reaction, the response to President Trump's evolving tariff plans. But I think at the same time, he's also pushing or nudging companies to reshore some of the manufacturing operations back to the U.S. That is good news. So for example, Apple is already committed around $500 billion to manufacturing some of the products in the U.S. So that would really stimulate the economy by creating more jobs, but that would take time.
So if there's a recession in America, how would citizens in other countries feel it? Would their economies be affected as well?
Absolutely. So I think that if the U.S. get into recessions, then the consumers buy less, but that will also affect the sales of some of the import goods. So China, they rely on a lot of exports. If the Americans are not buying them, it will affect the economy, definitely. Now, Europe is even worse because Europe, their sales in China is going down, and also that they rely on the U.S. market. If Trump is going to impose this reciprocal tariff on April 2nd, as he claimed, that will affect Europe as well. Because, for example, for cars, well, United States charged only a few percent for importing cars from Europe, and yet Europe charged over 10% for importing cars made in America. So under this new tariff plan, so that means the U.S. will also impose a different tariffs for importing cars from Europe for 10% because it's a reciprocate. So therefore, we reduce the sales of European cars from Europe. That will also affect the economy tremendously.
So, Professor, what I hear you saying is this is an excellent time to buy a Porsche.
Yes, if you are ahead of the money. Because right now, I think that this is a good time. Because after April 2nd, the tax will go up.
Professor Chris Tang of UCLA's Anderson School of Management. Professor, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for helping us sort this out.
Thank you.
Our other top story of the day, Russian forces are closing in on Ukrainian strongholds in Russia's Kursk region. This is representatives from Washington and Kyiv meet in Saudi Arabia. Lucy Fielder of Reuters has that story.
Russian forces advanced further in their efforts to retake the Kursk region on Monday, threatening to encircle thousands of Ukrainian soldiers, just as Kyiv prepared for talks with top US diplomats in Saudi Arabia. This video, released on Saturday by Ukraine's air assault forces, is said to show Ukrainian artillery fire targeting Russian special forces, who crept for miles through a gas pipeline to surprise Ukrainian troops holding Russian territory near Sudia. Reuters was able to verify the location and that a gas pipeline runs underground there. This video, said to show Russian troops inside the tunnel, was posted on social media. In it, the soldiers reference March 8th and that they're heading towards Sudia, though the date and location were not fully verifiable. Russian forces captured three more settlements in the area on Sunday after using the pipeline. By encircling Ukrainian soldiers, they aim to force them either to flee or to surrender in western Russia. Ukraine's air assault forces said in a post accompanying the video that enemy losses were high around Sudia. Reuters could not independently verify that. Meanwhile, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky was heading to Saudi Arabia for talks at a critical time for Kyiv. It will be the first official meeting between US and Ukrainian officials since a disastrous encounter between Zelensky and President Donald Trump in the Oval Office.
Don't tell us what we're going to feel.
Zelensky is expected to meet the Saudi Crown Prince, but has said he will not attend the talks with US negotiators, instead sending top officials, including his chief of staff and foreign and defense ministers. They're expected to focus on a bilateral minerals deal and how to end the war. Trump is pressing for a swift end to the conflict, and has upended US policy by pausing military aid to Ukraine and engaging directly with Moscow, raising fears among European leaders that Ukraine will lose the war.
That's Lucy Fielder of Reuters reporting for us. And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. The Syrian presidency announced on Monday an agreement with the head of the Kurdish-Syrian Democratic Forces to integrate the institutions of the semi-autonomous Kurdish administration in the northeast into the national government. The presidency published a statement signed by both parties explaining the agreement on the integration of all the civilian and military institutions of the northeast of Syria with the administration of the Syrian state. On Monday, doctors said Pope Francis is no longer in imminent danger of death as a result of pneumonia that's kept him hospitalized for nearly a month, but they have decided to keep him hospitalized for several more days to receive treatment. The Vatican said the doctors had lifted their previous prognosis of guarded, saying the Pope is no longer in imminent danger. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte pledged the military alliance's unwavering support for Bosnia-Herzegovina's territorial integrity after a series of Bosnian Serb separatist moves raised tensions nearly 30 years after the end of a bloody war. Rutte's comments came just days after Bosnian Serb lawmakers passed laws that barred Bosnia's central judicial authorities and its police from operating in the territory of Republika Srpska, a Serb-run entity in Bosnia. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish. And now a look at American domestic politics. On Monday, construction workers started to dismantle Black Lives Matter Plaza near the White House. Republican Representative Andrew Clyde of Georgia introduced a bill recently that urged the District of Columbia to rename the plaza or have the Congress withhold federal transportation funds. Republicans hold a majority in both chambers of Congress. Over the years, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, a Democrat, has been a vocal critic of President Trump. And because Washington, D.C. is not a state, its finances are largely ruled by the federal government. The mayor ordered the creation of Black Lives Matter Plaza in 2020 when the U.S. saw large anti-racism protests following the murder of George Floyd, a black man who died after a white police officer knelt on his neck for several minutes. Bowser was criticized by Trump at the time. Jessica Sawyer went to the plaza to protest its dismantling.
I'm here because I just felt such frustration and outrage when I heard that the administration had pressured D.C. to take out Black Lives Plaza. When this went in, it meant a lot to a lot of people, residents of D.C., but I think also to residents of the United States and to the world, that we were finally acknowledging something which has been a difficult part of U.S. culture.
Mayor Bowser said the mural inspired millions of people and helped the city through a very painful period, but now he can't afford to be distracted by what she calls meaningless congressional interference. More news from Syria. Interim President Ahmed Shara said that sectarian violence won't be tolerated. Olivia Zolino of Reuters reports.
Syria's interim president Ahmed Shara on Monday vowed to punish those responsible for the mass killings of ousted Bashar al-Assad's minority sect, including his own allies, if necessary.
Syria is, as we have confirmed, a state of law. The law will take its course on all, and we originally fought the regime and reached Damascus to defend the oppressed people. And we won't accept that any blood be shed unjustly or goes without punishment or accountability.
The interview was conducted by Reuters, but filmed by the Syrian presidency. It comes after hundreds have died in 4 days of clashes between Alawite Muslims and Syria's new Sunni Islamist authorities. Shara blamed pro-Assad groups backed by foreigners for triggering the bloodshed, but acknowledged that revenge killings had followed. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a UK-based war monitoring group, said that as of Sunday night, as many as 973 Alawite civilians had been killed in revenge attacks. More than 250 Alawite fighters and more than 230 members of the security forces have also died in the conflict. Shara said 200 members of the security forces had been killed in the unrest. He declined to say the overall death toll pending an investigation by an independent committee. While he blamed the outbreak of violence in recent days on a former military unit loyal to Assad's brother and an unspecified foreign power, he acknowledged that in response, quote, many parties entered the Syrian coast and many violations occurred. Shara also said his government has had no contact with the United States since President Donald Trump took office. He repeated pleas for Washington to lift sanctions imposed in the Assad era. He also held out the prospect of restoring relations with Moscow, Assad's backer throughout the war, which is trying to retain two major military bases in Syria.
That's Reuters' Olivia Zelino reporting for us. Mark Carney is set to become the next Prime Minister of Canada. VOA's Scott Walterman spoke with Tom Urbaniak of Cape Breton University in Nova Scotia to learn more about the man who will lead America's neighbor to the north.
Tell us a little bit about Mark Carney. Who is he?
So Mark Carney has a somewhat unusual path to the Prime Minister's office. Born in the Northwest Territories, raised in Alberta, educated in the field of economics. Most of his post-high school education has taken place outside Canada. Worked at Goldman Sachs for 13 years. Governor of the Bank of Canada, quite young when he was appointed to that role, and then, very unusually, became governor of the Bank of England, the first foreigner to hold that position. He's been hovering around federal politics, not just in his public service capacities, for quite some time. Even when Justin Trudeau sought the Liberal leadership, there was briefly discussion of maybe Mark Carney jumping into electoral politics. He takes office as Prime Minister without a seat in the House of Commons, which is very unusual, and he has never held a seat in the House of Commons. He will be promoted as someone who brings a lot of economic experience, who is a little bit of an outsider, even though he has a lot of insider connections, and that is something that the country could benefit from in this moment of crisis, even existential crisis, as Canada responds to Donald Trump's tariffs and Donald Trump's musings about Canada being annexed by the United States.
Liberals were trailing by 20 points, I believe, and have now pulled even with this news.
Yes. So if the Liberals manage to win the federal election, this will be maybe the most spectacular political comeback in Canadian federal electoral history. I mean, the Liberals just 2 months ago were written off. They were far, far behind the Conservatives in the polls.
How do you think this is playing overseas, like NATO?
Yeah, well, Mark Carney is a known quantity in diplomatic circles and in international organizations. This will be his election as Liberal leader and now Prime Minister designate will be probably welcomed by Canada's international partners other than the United States, of course. Mark Carney is dull, to put it bluntly. So he's not a charismatic politician, but that in these times could work for him to say that, you know, I'm a policy wonk. I think calmly about the options before us. I don't panic. I'm going to pragmatically work with people across the political spectrum. And that stands in contrast with my main opponent, Pierre Poilievre, who is very partisan.
VOA's Scott Walterman, in conversation with Tom Urbaniak of Cape Breton University. A British charity for the disabled, citing World Bank data, says the world could gain trillions annually in gross domestic product if women were employed at the same rate as men. The World Bank says failure to close gender employment gaps reduces a country's GDP by 20% on average. Experts are calling for greater efforts to improve women's access to jobs, especially for women with disabilities. Mohamed Youssef reports.
In many countries, women face multiple challenges when seeking employment. starting a business or doing anything that will economically sustain their lives and those of their families. Gender discrimination alone, especially if paired with disabilities, can drive women into poverty. According to Sightsavers International, a British non-governmental agency that aims to prevent avoidable blindness and ensure equality for the visually impaired, global GDP would increase from $106 trillion to $127 trillion if women were employed at the same rate as men. The charity cited those World Bank figures as part of a campaign to narrow gender employment gaps in recognition of International Women's Day. Overall, the World Bank data indicates that failure to employ more women reduces a country's economic growth by 20% on average. 41-year-old Michelle Madao from Zimbabwe is a beautician living with osteogenesis imperfecta, a brittle bone disease. Despite her disorder, she attempts to help people like her who need to learn how to run a business.
I'm mentoring upcoming beauticians who are disabled. I'm availing myself, making them, you know, making sure I'm there when I'm needed, speaking to them, helping them build up their own businesses. Of course, it might not all of them might be in the beauty industry, but whatever line of business that I am familiar with, I'm always there to assist them because I also want to see them win, just like I'm winning right now.
Lydia Rosasi, 29, works at the office of the Kenyan government spokesperson, where she leads inclusive communications. Rosasi works every day to ensure that people living with blindness, deafness, and other disabilities are not left behind when the government communicates with its citizens. She says she bettered herself to stand out in the job market.
For me, one of the greatest pillars in terms of navigating this double bias has been education and skills development. This has been the crucial thing that has kept me afloat as I go through these challenges. For example, in 2021, I joined the IT Bridge Academy, and you know, at that time, the digital skills were gaining a lot of prominence in the job market. So it gave me confidence and the capability that opened my doors. And then I have found supportive mentors and leaders who have been very, very important.
Many African women struggle to get jobs, either because they were married off or became mothers at a young age, leaving them unable to finish their studies. Others encounter discrimination or sexual violence in their workplaces. Experts say empowering girls with education and allowing them to finish school is one way to reduce the gender employment gap. Liana Jones works on economic empowerment at Sightsavers. She says closing the gender gap requires policy reforms and cultural change.
In terms of closing the gender gap in employment and entrepreneurship, this really requires coordinated interventions at multiple levels. At the policy level, we need to eliminate discriminatory laws and regulations that restrict women's economic participation. For women with disabilities, we need specialised approaches that address both gender and disability-related barriers simultaneously. And lastly, we need to challenge social norms through engagement with community leaders, men and boys.
According to Equal Measures 2030, a coalition of national, regional and global leaders from feminist networks, civil society and international development, in at least 77 countries, women are not allowed to work in the same jobs or sectors as men. In Africa, only 5 countries have a full set of laws mandating workplace equality for women. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Karish. We'll be right back.